as I've proven over and over again in this exercise of 40 and 30, I've had a lot of luck. I've had good fortune to be able to match up players with people that I think are very emblematic or are sort of tied to in the lore of this player and our experience in taking in the game. We got Johnny Sources talking about David Schneider, right? That was the beginning of that. We got Chris Black talking about Dalton Varsho, undoubtedly became the Varsho guy, whether he wanted to or not. That ended up being what happened. And today, no exception, when people think about George Springer signing with the Toronto Blue Jays, invariably, if they were online way back then, their experience is tied to one tweet from one man. And that man joins me today. I am so excited to talk. You know him, you love him. You know him as BK on Twitter. Is that how you prefer to be introduced on podcasts? I should have asked this beforehand. You like Brendan,
yeah, obviously. That works for me. You don't have much to tie me to. So yeah, the guy who tweets ball.
A great ball tweeter. Brendan Kuhn joins me. And again, the George Springer news breaker. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing well, Zoobs. A few things in life I enjoy more than talking ball with you. So to do it on this podcast is a pleasure. We have an interesting player to talk about today. Curious George.
Yeah. How do you feel about you? You're a George Springer guy to everybody else online, right? How do you feel about that? About sort of like taking on the mantle of people I'm sure tweet at you when he's good or bad.
Yeah, it's interesting because I basically just wrap my own feelings on George into how I feel about him, regardless of that association. So yeah, we had 2 years of a lot of fun where it was like everything it was explained away by injury. Anything negative was simply injury related.
That's right.
And everything else was awesome. And
now casually dating. We were casually dating George Springer. And now it's 3 years into the relationship.
We had a very, very new experience with George Springer in 2023. So it's interesting. Contracts age. We know that when they're signed. We say, who cares about the future? But we got hit in the face pretty hard last year. And what that means moving forward, there's questions.
There's a lot of questions about George Springer. And you sort of laid it out really nicely there, actually, as everything bad before this was able to be explained away and everything good was really good. So there was really nothing to complain too much about. Last year was very challenging for him and for fans of his and for the lineup in general. And I think all of those things go hand in hand. I'm excited to dive into what happened in 2023 and look at what might happen in 2024 and take a bigger picture glimpse of George Springer today. Some details I think you all already know. George Springer, 131 starts in right field last year, 21 at DH. Felt like it was supposed to be more than that, but it wasn't. First time since 2016, he didn't play center field for more than one game and did it for two innings. As you said, 34 years old. He is signed through 2026. That is 34, 35, and 36. But hey, I'm 38 and I feel fine. So I always love doing that. It's like George has aged poorly. It's like, luckily not me. I'm as disappointing priming as ever physically.
in your disappointment prime.
I am in my prime in that I was never in anything to aspire to, right? So I haven't fallen off from anything. That's pretty close to arguable. Signed through 26. He does hit 10 years service time in about a month or so. And you probably remember, we talked about it. January 23rd, 2021, 6 years, $150 million. What did that moment feel like? I'm sure you've been asked a million times. That had to have been transformative.
Yeah, a roller coaster couple days. That was an interesting offseason to begin with, because it had the context of when is this cheap front office going to start spending money and doing something. And that offseason had the backdrop of Francisco Lindor and a lot of expectation on a trade there. And then the Mets deal happens. I think that wasn't too long before the Springer signing. I think that was within a few weeks. So
yeah, I think so.
And I think the Jays that offseason had a pretty strong plan to get one of those guys. And you know, they got their guy. It was fun to be a part of that created a chaotic, you know, 48 hours in my life, very enjoyable, chaotic 48 hours in my life. But yeah, being at the barbershop firing off some tweets. That was fun. That was an experience.
This is what I'm missing out by having not visited a barbershop in like 8 years.
the highlight of all that was, of course, the your podcast following the signing.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes. Everybody out there wondering, listening along, how do I get on the show? Break one of the biggest signings in team history.
Yeah,
step by step. Boy, he is. It's obviously tied to you, but. As a Blue Jays fan and in this window, this really what he was just like a it's hard to even overstate what a watershed moment that was. That's the guy that day, that signing is what allows us to believe basically anything when it comes to free agents, right? That's why I believed Ohtani. That's why I believed anything else that they might go get Matt Chapman, that they were going to replace Robbie Ray with another good pitcher. I sort of was able to give the team a little more room, because this and obviously Ryu the year before was like real proof of they are going after the model of we're signing guys for Vladdy and Bo's prime and we're surrounding these guys with whatever they possibly can. I think that was sort of what people look at, because people always still do the oh Shackens never spends, and it's like the George Springer is a crazy contract to give out. I don't think we realized at the time. Now that we're again at the 34, it's like this is an insane thing to do with this core that we had just started out.
That was the free agent contract of that offseason. Like that was the big one. Even Ryu, as you mentioned, Ryu was kind of like the introduction to, okay, we're not rebuilding anymore. We're now growing towards something. But that was after missing out on Gerrit Cole, which never seemed possible, but the Jays were very in on that. Missing out on Zach Wheeler, who the Jays were also very, very interested in. So that was still, despite it being a lot of money, that was still giving the older, oft-injured, soft-tossing lefty a year beyond what anyone else would. And yes. He was like the fifth biggest pitcher contract that offseason. To pivot the following year, to grow upon that with, you know, a contract that was the free agent contract of the offseason, you're outbidding the Steve Cohen Mets to get him. You're right. That was kind of the breakthrough moment of Toronto spends. They're willing to spend. They will go after the big guys in free agency. And then, we see the Brios extension come from that. And what other big contracts were signed after that? Obviously, Bassett last offseason. Kevin Gausman, another time they beat out the Mets for a guy the Mets really wanted. They've had a lot of plays in free agency, and most have actually gone pretty well. George TBD, but it really was kind of the turnaround of Blue Jays got all this momentum and this is the hot baseball place to be, and it's amazing how that could looking back on that and how recent that was and yet how far ago that feels now, but here we are.
It's been absolutely rapid. I think of things like that all the time, like doing this series. When I said out loud that Nate Pearson has already 3 exact years of service time, I was like, Jesus. That's not good feeling, but I totally agree with everything you said there. And you know, a part of this is the bill coming due on all that stuff. And I think when Springer signed that, we were all silently agreeing of like, back end of this isn't going to be that much fun. We'll have had our, it was worth it already by the time we get there. We just so happened to. The playoff berths happened and the playoff wins didn't happen. We were sort of at the time he's signing it, you're like, oh, we make the playoffs 2 years in a row and 3 years out of 4. Of course. Just not how being alive for the actual events often works out. And we are at the other side of this. And it began last year. The good news is he played 154 games. The bad news, it just was by far the worst year of his career. Generously, 258, 327, 405, 21 home runs, 104 WRC plus, 2.2 wins, no matter where you slice it, 18.3 strikeout rate, 8.8 walkout rate. There's a lot to cut into and look at here when we get into some of the specifics of what happened and the cause for this. But big picture, looking back at it and looking at like a list of all of the years of his career put together, sort of what did this year feel like for you and sort of you, if you had to diagnose it without diving into it, what did it seem like was going on there?
Yeah. So I like to look at the numbers. I like numbers probably more than I should, as far as like trying to figure out the sliders on Baseball Savant and whatnot. But with George, I actually kind of just have what I feel from last year. And it was just, it was strange. Everything with him was, despite playing all these games, it was just awkward. It was awkward swings. It was, it felt like every time he put a ball in play, he like missed the sweet spot by like an inch, mm-hmm. and he was like close to mashing something, but it just got in on his hands, and he just didn't have the juice. And you know, even like some of these first and second row dingers, it's like, yeah, like he hit a home run, but he kind of like just snuck it over the fence. And it's not like going to the numbers, like max exit velocity and stuff like that was there. He had the capability, but he just kind of seemed to be like he was running in sand a little bit, both with his, you know, bat speed, contact, his sprint speed was down. He continued to do the kind of stumble out of the box or the swing, and it looks like he's about to break apart every time he misses the ball. So it was just kind of a bad vibes year from a really good vibes player. And it sucks because he to experience that, because before he'd come to the plate and you're pumped for that any prior year. George is coming to the plate, game's on the line. That's the guy you want. That you think of that Red Sox Matt Barnes showdown he had a couple years ago, where they have this, you know, longer at bat and he hits the 3-run home run. You just felt it was coming. You could feel the buildup. The crowd could feel that buildup. And in a 2023 baseball season that didn't feel like it had any of that, as much as Vlad is kind of the poster child for that, George is right there with them as far as just, yeah, that those good feelings and those good vibes just weren't there anymore.
It's a shame. I agree with so much of what you said, that it definitely, I mean, number one, the visual, he is not a great guy at not looking hurt. That's for sure. Like, boy, he would run through first base and a second before the camera cut, he would either like step weird, or maybe he was making a hand gesture over and over again. Like, is he hurt? Is he coming out? What's going on here? He would swing and miss and then like shake his arm out, or he would foul the ball off his leg a ton. He just seemed to be a target for dings and bumps and cuts and bruises. And as you know, and as I know, you start to worry that part of that is just being in your mid-30s versus being in your late-20s. That's how it goes. I often talk about like LeBron James for the longest time. It was like, LeBron's not even made of the same parts as humans. He never gets hurt. And then he gets his mid-30s, and it's like, okay, he gets hurt every year for 15 to 20 games. And it's like, okay, he only plays 60 games. It's like these things happen very quickly. And I agree with you. And I, you know, 2023 was a lot of what was in question in 2022 really exacerbated. Like, a lot of the stuff that was things that made us a little worried in 2022 sort of became what took over the profile, where it was like there was a lot of moments in 2022 where you're like, ooh, yeah, it doesn't look quite right. I think he's hurt, or I think he's playing through something, or he's missing this part of his game, or this quite isn't where it usually is. But he was playing off it with enough power and doing enough in fielding and sort of getting value everywhere, being a great base runner still. Wasn't able to do as much of the peripheral stuff this year, and I do worry that it's physical in a way that's like the lines are razor thin, as you mentioned. Like, a lot of the time it looked like he was just missing by a razor thin thing. And I think a guy like him, you know, has been able to be athletic enough to be great at everything and like in hitting. Hit the other way with power, pull with power, runs well, throws well, fields well. I think as you get older, you start to have to specialize a little bit. And I'm not sure if that's not where we're about to go with what happened to George Springer. So let's pop the hood a little bit, talk about some of the circles. As you mentioned, he was negative batting, base running, and fielding value per StatCast last year. Not in stark ways, but just a little bit. Only real red circles are chase and K rates. We'll come back to that. I think that's sort of interesting. Nothing dramatic on righty-lefty or home and away. He was so bad to start the year. 68 WRC plus in April, 60 WRC plus in July. When he was bad, he was dreadfully bad. Weird wrinkle, 44 WRC plus as a DH. What?
You know what's interesting about that? So you pointed out that out to me before the pod here, and then I went and looked at 2022, and it was a little more normal. So I thought, okay, like maybe that's an outlier, just 2023. Then go back to 2021, his monster season with the Jays, and he was like, it was a massive difference. He had exactly 170 plate appearances as a DH and in center field, In 2021, he had a 185 WRC plus as a center fielder and a 98 as a DH. So he was best hitter in the world in center field in 2021. And as a DH, it was lesser. I'm wondering if that can be tied to the aches and pains being a little more prevalent for him, where the team is giving him breather days opposed to just the like, oh yeah, George, you've been playing a lot lately, let's get you a DH day, where maybe he's actually nursing something we aren't as aware of, and that's putting him at DH, but also he's a little bit deteriorated, and that explains the numbers. But yeah, I mean, two of the last three seasons, there's been a stark difference in outfield versus DH.
I would say those 3 years in a row, a pretty worrying decline from 90 something to 60 something to 40 something. I wish you hadn't told me that a little bit. The WRC plus runners in scoring position wasn't dreadful, but it was really weirdly weighted. There's like no slugging. He walks a lot more with runners in scoring position. And unfortunately, he hits 20 double plays last year, which is a career high. And more than half of them are on the first or second pitch of the at bat. Like, it's just crazy. He gets up there, and I guess he's pressing. I don't know what I have a bigger thesis overall, but whatever it is, like, I think he's going ambush mode maybe there, trying to cheat fastball maybe there. He just beats that ball into the ground, pull aside last year. It's crazy. Big note, he moved down in the order. He was leadoff basically his entire time here. They moved him down because of the full season career lows and basically everything. There's more to get to, but your thoughts first and foremost on the batting order thing, because I think just sort of some of the change in style here is what predicated that.
I think I'm comfortable in the opening the season with George where he's familiar with, and not because it means anything as far as like, oh, batting fourth, I'm now not familiar in the batter's box, but more just the, you know, you're a veteran here, a leader, this is where you hit. You give him that to start, but you got to be able to pivot off of it, which I'm glad Schneider was willing to do last year. And if circumstances dictate that he shouldn't be hitting leadoff, then for a team with urgency everywhere, front office, coaching staff, players, you got to react to what you see in front of you. And leadoff is a player or a batting position for somebody who's very important, somebody who should be getting the most at bats in a given game, and who you want turning the lineup over each time. There's a lot of relevance to that batter spot, you know, hitting their one versus hitting five. That's a difference of like, I want to say like 80 plate appearances over a year, something like that. So it matters. So you give George the early run, and if his April matches last April, I don't think you can really play that out too much longer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm inclined to agree. It does seem like a matter of time before they change it out. We'll see what kind of hitter he becomes, because I think he's at a crossroads with the kind of hitter he's going to be, and he's going to have to decide sort of which way. Western man, are you the guy that decided, I think at some point last year, to be a little bit more contact rate because some of the other stuff isn't working out so well, and maybe, as you said, maybe not physically up at all times to being a guy who punishes everything to all parts of the field. If he's going to go slap hitter, he can, we'll see, but I think I know which way I'd rather him go. So we get into, I was like, okay, that's a lot of interesting split stuff. Now I got to go a layer deeper. Now I got to go to the pitch values and see if anything crazy happens, because sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes baseball is just random. And sometimes a guy is year in, year out, mid 20s, positive fastball run value. And then all of a sudden he is negative. And that's what happened to George Springer. Just a guy that I would say every piece of success in his career was on fastballs get punished. And the trickle down effect from that. This is what happens when a guy doesn't have that going for him. Fastball eats him up, and then slider sweeper, it is over. That is just, the recipe is pretty simple on the heat maps. You can see it pretty quick. The league seems to figure out he can't hit up and in the way that he used to be able to with heat. And everybody throws a slider, a sweeper, and a fastball. It's like 95% of the league that you're facing. They work him down in a way 25% of the time. And it was just rinse and repeat, at bat after at bat after at bat. He crushed curveballs because I think it's a little more, he seems like a guy that is sitting fastball and reacting to everything else. And this year and last year, I think your natural ability to catch up to fastball slips a little bit because you've been hurt and you're 34, and it just slips. That razor thin margin is a hair off and suddenly you're starting a hair earlier, or it's a little bit harder to lay off, and your swing take that was in your entire career was elite swing take decisions. Now that's a little bit worse, and you're losing value in all these little places, and you're in real trouble because, you know, he in Houston at his best, he hit the ball with power to all fields. And then his first 2 years in Toronto, he was like a 40%+ pull guy. He was like getting big power and generating it. That last year still hit 900 OPS, 145 WRC plus to the right side, but put the ball on the ground 60% of the time, pulling it. So I see a guy selling out to pull for power, and the whole field approach isn't really as honest as it looks. I think he made an adjustment later in the year to be a little bit more of a slap guy. And a lot of the opposite field stuff is soft hit, jam shots, late on stuff because he's selling out a little bit more. What do you think about the sudden trouble with the fastball?
You know, I've long had this thing with baseball where every fan needs to get in the batting cage to see what 95 looks like just one time to like sure. have a tiny bit of ability to relate to what you see on the TV, because I can't imagine there's another sport where like a 5% decline in reaction time in that kind of losing a little bit of your athleticness in your mid 30s would affect you more than being a batter, because everything you're doing is based on the fastest reaction time humanly possible. And it's not like every pitch is coming 95. You got to be able to hit the other stuff too. So yeah, that I can understand how that's one of the things that can really hit a cliff for a lot of players. And it's just, it's different overnight and it can never come back. Some guys find ways to juggle their mid-30s and have, you know, a decent year here or down year, a decent year. But it's just from an age perspective, it's not surprising. From a guy who's battled so many health issues over the last handful of years, it's not surprising. So it's one of those things I just want to ignore, like just pretend it's not happening and just try and like just pray on the fact that, yeah, like maybe he just bounces back at age 34. But you understand how this can happen, and it's not exactly pretty. But he was Mr. Barrels. He got underneath, like you said, year one to year two, despite the overall numbers being pretty strong, there is a difference in some of the batted ball stuff. He hit fly balls, he hit line drives, and he hit them with authority in the first year. That started to step back last year, the year after, and then last year, a real decline, and just a lot of soft contact, and that is just never who he's been. And it is kind of fun to watch players adjust to what they're becoming and see if they can find the best version of themselves in that new body they have and that new age, and where experience can trump a little bit of that athletic decline. But he's got to figure out what he is moving forward and find the way to be the best version of that.
Not the best. It's not the best. I'll tell you how this starts. Is it starts off as being like, I wonder if he's just sliding down washed up alley. And then you go through it and you're like, okay, here's the big statistical argument. And it's like, the argument's sort of that he's washed up. Like the argument is sort of not being able to hit the fastball is what happens to guys in their 30s. But you alluded to it and I agree. It's decision time. Is it going to be, we're selling out even more for power next year and you just live with the results? Like that's what it is. Guys who sell out for power have lower on base. That is the trade, and you continue, you know, you try to establish that you can be a guy who punishes fastball and just sit dead red and live with the fact that every now and then you're going to get wiped out on the other end of it. Or do you do what I think he did a little bit of last year, and you see in the career low whiff rate, the career high zone contact rate, do you go the other way and, you know, hitting the ball the other way, hit flares and contact and being disruptive in another way, is that the way to, you know, elongate the signs of aging, or you know, find a way to make yourself useful, find a way to make yourself a valuable player? It's going to be a challenge, man, because you know, he was great at everything, and that's what's so good and so hard about it is when these guys are great at everything, I think it's got to be very hard to be like, okay, my approach can't be I jump on fastball and I have the perfect reaction time to breaking stuff away, and I take stuff the other way soft as well, and I also hit the both gaps hard, and I also run well, and I also have a great arm, and I also field. It's like that stuff doesn't last forever. Major league careers can last a long time, but you eventually have to start making some of the concessions and start making some of the trades in compensating for one thing by costing yourself something else. I don't know if you wanted silver lining cope spin zone. It looked a lot like 2018, and in 2019 was his best career year. All he has to do then, to me, is be 29 again. So who among us?
Exactly. Hey, many us? People have been 29 for many, many years. That is the hold on age that everybody has. So let's find that for George again. I think I lean towards the goal of George should have the goal of damage until that is clearly not working. So yeah. I would want to see him be okay swinging and missing, maybe looking silly more than he has in the past on some ugly swings, with the goal of punishing the balls that he's hit in the past. And he's not the only Blue Jay this applies to. There are others who are much younger than 29, who are kind of in the same place, it seems. But yeah, I would just like to see George at least fail at a damage approach before he becomes a reinvented version of himself. I don't know if you remember last year, I want to say it was like August, and George was given some, media comments and stuff like that. And he brought up how he asked the analytics guys and the numbers guys, like, what's going on with my season? Like, what's happening here? And they told me, like, everything looked the same, man. You're just unlucky. And I'm like, wow, they're really protecting your feelings. They must know you're sensitive. this is not the same as what you have been in the past. This isn't just bad luck. He may have been unlucky. I'm not saying that's not true. However, it was a combination of relevant decline on top of maybe a bit of misfortune. But I did find that funny, and it was an eye potentially into how teams talk to players. And sometimes, sure. And I'm not saying that I know this to be the case, but maybe, they know George to be someone whose ego needs to be stroked a little bit, and he needs to be told certain things. And maybe that's how that came up, because I don't know how else the nerds of the Blue Jays would say, George, you're killing it. Just keep doing exactly this and everything will be fine.
You don't think they slipped in like, everything looks the same, and just went, maybe bat speed. Maybe it's a bat speed by just a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of nerds and what they think, let's move into the projections. Pretty similar no matter where you look. I've said this to a lot of these intros on the projections, but I sort of have two beliefs what you can do with projections. The best thing you can do is ignore them. Second best thing you can do is amalgamate them. So we'll look at them as a group. 254 to 258, 333, and then a 430 to 450 slugging. That is a range between 22 and 27 home runs. ISOs between 178 and 190. WRC pluses between 111 and 116. And win values between 2.2 and 2.9, which is to say, better than last year in the power department. They're buying a power jump back, and buying a slight boost in on base. So they're saying a bit of a bounce back, a 10% to 12% back bounce back, and maybe another half win better. Is this close to what you expect? Some of them are sort of saying the power might not come back, but Steamer seems to think he's nearly a 30 home run guy. Does that feel right to you? 111, 116, 2.5 wins?
I would say he's such a mystery. I don't know what to expect. But when I look at these numbers, I would say if I'm offered 2.9 wins above replacement right now, I think I'm signing up for that over the unknown. Two of these three projection systems have him at 2.9. WRC plus around the, average those two out and about 114. Like, I think I'm signing up for that. It would still feel slightly disappointing or underwhelming. And the performance of the other guys on the team that you maybe are more hopeful of a bounce back, if those guys do that, then it's easier to stomach a 114 weighted runs created plus from George. But yeah, I think if you're offering me 2.9 right now, I'm just taking it.
Yeah, I think three wins, I'd be pretty happy with three wins. And just the return to I mean, it's not even that high of slugging, but just to return to like damage mode is sort of the real miss there, as we talked about. Like, at his best, it's just damage all over the place, and you really can't miss to him. I think he still has that in him, and it'll be a matter of proving, you know, that the things we saw last year as weaknesses have been fortified. Discourse. I mean, you got to hear this all the time. The discourse around George Springer. I mean, quite frankly, if you and I are talking like this, I think you are pretty clear that the discourse on George Springer may have turned a little bit a guy that people were just joyous to have. I think there's some big collar tugs and big gulps going on for people about their thoughts around George Springer right now.
I think as high profile a player as George is, and being the highest paid bat, the existence of Vlad has helped George in the discourse department, because I think if Vlad was a better version of himself last year, the target would be a little bit more firmly on George's back. So I think that benefits him in the discourse department. And I don't know if some of that is just kind of like, oh, he's older, we get it. But yeah, I think it's just kind of like apathy towards George that I see from places, like just kind of that like shoulder shrug frustration, but it's not like vitriolic. It's like, oh, this sucks. That's kind of how I feel, right? Like last year, just, oh, this sucks to watch. Like I'm not mad at him. But sitting there shaking my fist at George, like, oh, like this sucks. This isn't what we had so much fun with the previous couple of years and the guy we knew from Houston. So yeah, it just kind of, that's what makes me just kind of hopeful that he finds something here. And like we've talked about, just do a little damage and let us, at the very least, if we can just see him as a home run threat where he feels like, if nothing else, like there is a power threat at the plate, a guy who can hit the ball, you know, pull it 390 feet, second deck into Rogers Center. I mean, that's a win. But the discourse is interesting. It is kind of like an apathy as much as it is vitriolic.
Yeah, I think great point about Vlad. I always say if Vlad hits, we were laughing for years and years. If Vlad was the best hitter in the league, a lot of this shit that we worry about would not matter. George being a 104 and moving to right field, we'd be like, yep, that was the plan. The generational player is playing well, so this is all what's supposed to happen.
Exactly.
Force a comp. I told you before this, and I've seen this has got taken a lot of different ways by a lot of different people. Does George Springer either stage of career, stage of style, stage of whatever it is? What's your forced comp for 2024 George Springer? What does it remind you of?
So I had the one that first came into my mind immediately. Like I'm thinking like, oh, I hadn't thought of it before. I'm usually not comping, you know, guys in their 30s. So, but then I had a name pop into my head and then I looked in the numbers. I'm like, okay, it's maybe not as tightly aligned as I thought it was, but Andrew McCutchen.
Ooh.
So a couple right-handed hitting superstar caliber players in their 20s. And Kutch kind of went from that superstar to like that slightly above average player pretty quick. Like he had that transition very quick, but then he's kind of managed to hang on and be a capable guy with some highs and some lows. Like and the weird thing about McCutchen is his decline happened earlier than George. Like he was a superstar mid 20s, whereas Springer, you know, went to university, and so he was a later start into Major League Baseball. But McCutchen in his like, you know, 24, 25, 26, 27 age seasons was a superstar. And then by the time he was 29, he had a 153 game season with a 105 WRC plus. And then the 3 years before that, his worst was 144. So that was a weird wall for somebody to hit at that age. So it hit earlier for McCutchen than it has for Springer last year. And then I'm just going to rattle these off. Age and WRC plus. So age 30, 122. Age 31, 121. Age 32, 120. Age 33, down to 102. 34, 108. 35, 98. But then age 36, back up to 115. So
here we go.
I kind of feel like that feels like somewhere George could settle into over these next couple years, where maybe he has another 103 WRC plus season, but also maybe there's a 118 or a 119, 121 in there. And hopefully he can just hang on to being kind of that league average, maybe slightly above league average player in his mid 30s here, like Andrew McCutchen has turned out to be, despite, again, as much as it feels like George is aging all of a sudden, here's a player who did exactly, he did kind of what George did, but like in his age 29, age 30 season area. So yeah, it's not a perfect comp, but it's the first one that popped in my head, and I kind of like parts of it. Cause yeah, it just, if a player who in our heads was a superstar who then just kind of became an average player really quickly.
I like that a lot. That's a really nice comp. Well done. One of my favorites so far. Nice. IJ's tinge mine a little bit. I just sort of how I naturally am. How does this hit your ears? 2010 Vernon Wells.
So you know what's funny is that is another name that popped into my head. I didn't look into it because I kind of dug into McCutchen. Yeah, I'm like, okay, I'm going to ride this out. But I thought, okay, Vernon Wells, how? I feel like I forget how good he was.
Yeah, he doesn't have the sustained highs as a Springer. Like, and as I think this is just sort of natural for how the game was before. Like, by age 30, he's like getting booed out of the building. So he's at his first full real year, 2003, and he was 24. He hit 33 home runs and was a 132 OPS plus, then 105, 104. So he doesn't climb the heights that Springer does, obviously. The guy's like an MVP candidate, but 129 and then 85 in 27 after he signs the big contract. And everybody, he goes from like, this guy's been here 10 years and everybody loves him. And it's just having him around, what a pleasure, to like, we're going to boom at home for 2 years straight. And it's like, come on. But then on the way out the door, 2010, he has an all-star season with a 125 OPS plus. This is why I'm using 2010, because 2009, he was so bad, played 158 games, 15 home runs, 86 OPS plus. People were booing him. The contract that he signed that he got killed for, which was like, in reality, you look back at it, and it was like $20 million, like $26 million at the highest. It's like, it's really not a crazy deal for a guy that was a Gold Glove center fielder. But again, we arrive, he hits the mid-30s, and people are ready to throw him off the cliff. So I'm betting on the 2010 bounce back 31-year-old Vernon Wells season where he makes the All-Star game.
That is a wild ride Wells took from age 28 to age 31. He just bounced back and forth between like awful offensive player to good offensive player. And he did that back and forth over those years. And then it is funny because I wasn't really recalling exactly how his Jays career ended, but that last season's better than I thought it was, because I remember being really happy they got rid of that contract. Yes. So I look at the numbers and like, he had a great year. Why was I so thrilled about that? Now, clearly it was the right call, because those post Jays years were horrific, but he had a better finale than I realized. Also, a fun guy to root for. So yeah, I like that one as well. I like that pull Zoobs, and yeah, fascinating late 20s that he had for the Jays.
Okay, we've arrived at 2024 outlook for you. I mean, we talked about projections. We talked about what happened last year. We talked about where he is, what you would like to see happen. What is your feeling for how 2024 is going to go?
So as we've talked about, it's a mystery. I carry zero confidence in any type of prediction I can give. However, yeah, I feel like a guy who hits more home runs than last year, I think that's a goal, because it's even been publicly stated by those with the team. You know, we want to see George doing what he does best, pulling the ball, that type of thing. So I see at least an attempt to be a bit more of that damage guy we talked about. And I'm hopeful that he stumbles into a version of himself that works. I am probably guessing in that 2.5 to 3 win range. But yeah, I mean, that I feel like the error bars in this conversation are huge. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he went up and went out and put a 135 WRC plus. I'd be very happy with that, but it wouldn't be a stunning outcome. At the same time, like a 97, like that exists. That possibility is more real than I would want it to be. So there are massive error bars on the discussion of age 34 George, which is funny coming off of the second healthiest season of his life. You figure that would have brought a little bit of certainty, and yet here we are with all these question marks, and we've been talking for a long time, and it's still kind of a shoulder shrug as to what it is we're looking at and what it is we're expecting.
Yeah, I am no closer to knowing than I was before. And it is curious, right? It was definitely the second most games he's played. Is it the second healthiest he's been? Those are two different conversations, I think.
Did George do the I'm dying thing in Houston? Like, I didn't watch enough Astros to know if he was just, like, always in running the bases, swinging a bat, playing outfield. Was he on his deathbed every moment he was doing an athletic activity?
Couldn't have been. It's got to be the turf just chewing him up inside. Yeah. It's the only explanation I could have. I'm with you. I think we're looking. We're going further down the sellout for power rabbit hole here, I think, with George. I think it's going to be coming out of the gate, making a statement, sitting dead red fastball, and hoping that his shoulder doesn't fall off his body when he tries to hold off on sliders.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, listen, the team is built the way that it is. He's going to have to play right field a lot. We've talked ourselves out of him ever DHing, I think. Pretty confidently, so that's good. I think you're most of the point. Like, you'd rather him just have a day off than DH at this point.
Yep.
Just relax, get the feet up. I do wonder, you know, the year prior, and it was a concussion, so it's a little different thing, but like, he spent part of his offseason recuperating and not, you know, I always, it was like a thing I read about NFL quarterbacks, that people are generally cautious when the guy spent the whole year getting better health-wise, then getting better skill-wise. Far as I know, George didn't have to like get any mystery surgeries like he has in years past in between seasons. I think there's a space for him to just a little bit more bat speed, catch up to some fastballs, and let everything flow from there. And I don't think we can even discount, you know, what a problem the really bad start to the year was. And you get, even in a veteran guy like George who can trust the skills, you get antsy, you start swinging early in counts, and you start chasing bad results with bad process. And if he can avoid that early trap, there are some really good months in that year. There's two really bad months. Everything else is like, he's getting by, and sometimes it's very good. So I think the guys in there that it can be honest with himself and be honest with his body, and maybe not push it and say like, BGO can play right field. We'll build the plane while we're flying, sort of thing. I think there's room for another good George Springer year.
I'm in.
We close it out. Big picture. I mean, he's here till 2026. I think. Don't know anything beyond that. I just know more than one person on Sportsnet properties this offseason said that a George Springer trade was in the air. Don't know any sort of level of veracity of that, but you know, if all absolute hell breaks loose and this year looks like an absolute fucking wash, and the year is they're not gonna make the playoffs, and suddenly the questions get really loud about the core, is he a sell-off piece? It's definitely possible. I don't know what the return on a guy making the money that he's making for three playoff runs would be for another team, but it's been floated there. I just don't know. I wouldn't expect to be like, we traded George and got a different team's star back. That's for sure.
Well, and with such a weird trade and free agent market this offseason too, I entering the offseason when we had like the crazy money from last offseason fresh on our minds, I thought 367 for George would be possibly tradable, like underwater, but maybe 10 mil underwater, 15 mil underwater. Maybe I was being a little optimistic with that number, but now I have no idea. So basically a George trade is probably just bad contract for bad contract, or as you said, the nightmare Blue Jays scenario season plays out. It turns into a situation where next year just isn't the year where they're going after it, and they just are trading pieces. So not a fun scenario, but it is one that exists as a possibility. But there's also a scenario, as you said, where maybe George doesn't fit a competitive team next year as well, and maybe they're just doing something different. So who knows? I want to live in the world where he's hitting dingers and smiling and happy and giving us those playoff moments. It is funny, the narrative around like playoff performers, and we're bringing in George, you know, the proven winner, the guy who like shows up in the postseason and stuff like that. And then, I mean, players have like 7-8 at bats if the playoff series is best of three.
Yeah,
it can be over real quick. You don't really have a chance to settle into that playoff form. So, we need to see this group have their moments, because there has been front office shortcomings. But at the same time, there's a lot of good players. Pitching's great. The offense is capable of being better than they've shown us. And And yeah, I mean, this core needs to produce some kind of moment at some point, because yeah, it's quite possibly over very soon, as much as it feels like it just began.
Rosy stuff here today. I'm with you. I mean, it feels like this core deserves a moment. It feels like the core deserves some great memories. It feels like they just need to have the big moment in them.
You know who else deserves a big moment? You and I.
Hell yes. It's been too long.
We need that happy feeling. We need that Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion home run type of moment. We deserve that with this core. The core deserves it too. And yeah, hopefully this is just one of those fun years where the things break right instead of break wrong.
There is the alternative, thinking about the 2026 team that does have George Springer and doesn't have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be a weird year. Last year, Kevin Gausman. Yeah, that's just, yeah.
Worry about that 2:40 and 30s from now, and I'll be sure to call you back up when we're previewing a much less fun to look at it. And maybe less confusing, because the answers are quite obvious. Blue Jays team. BK, thank you so much for the time, man. I appreciate your time tonight.
Had a blast, Subs. Appreciate it.
A pleasure. You can find him on Twitter with great tweets. With great tweets. I mean, that's the fucking way to do it. I'm scrambling. I've forgotten to write down your Twitter handle to memory. I see it. Underscore BKUH underscore. Follow him, find him. The bio just says WRC plus.
There you go. Today's chosen metric, so it fits.
Absolutely right. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it. As always, if you're looking for more 40 and 30, the whole series, profile by profile, player by player, as we approach opening day, is available on the Less Than Jays Patreon at the $9 tier, or you can get the publicly available episodes a little bit early at the $5 tier, but all 40 player profiles are on the $9 tier, Less Than Jays on Patreon, patreon.com/lessthanjays. So much more to come as we tick down the days. Got a special treat for you coming out on Saturday, a doubleheader on some pitching. And then we head into opening week. The top of the mountain awaits. Thank you so much for your hard-earned attention and patience. And thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jays.